Welcome to the documentary from the BBC World Service, where we report the world, however difficult the issue, however hard to reach. Podcasts from the BBC World Service are supported by advertising.
If you're hearing this, you're probably already listening to BBC's award-winning news podcasts. But did you know that you can listen to them without ads? Get current affairs podcasts like Global News, Americast and The Global Story, plus other great BBC podcasts from history to comedy to true crime, all ad-free. Simply subscribe to BBC Podcast Premium on Apple Podcasts or listen to Amazon Music with a Prime membership. Spend less time on ads and more time with BBC Podcasts.
For decades, baby girls have been disappearing across India. If people asked what had happened, the family might say the girl had died in childbirth or become ill and passed away. But mostly, people knew not to ask questions.
When a girl was born, the family would lock the room and stand behind us with sticks. They'd say, "We'll give you 50 rupees. We already have 4-5 daughters. This will wipe out our wealth. Once we give dowry for all our girls, we'll starve to death. We already have many daughters. Now another girl has been born. Kill her."
I first heard about baby girls being killed in India about 30 years ago. I was a young reporter back then, hungry for stories. I had heard about a case in Katihar, close to my hometown. So I returned there to learn more. What I found out was deeply disturbing.
I killed at least 15 to 20, not many. I used to hold their neck like this and kill them. I fed them salt and that killed them. Then I would take them to the forest and bury them. I used to go in the evening when it was dark. I would take them to the forest and bury them in the dark.
I am Amitabh Parashar, and this is The Midwife's Confession, for the documentary on the BBC World Service. When I began this investigation nearly 30 years ago, I was not prepared for what I would find out. At that time, almost all babies in rural Bihar were born at home, delivered by midwives, their lives in their hands.
Since dowry became common practice, I've killed 12-13 babies.
I met the midwives one by one. They each told me the same thing.
I killed one and buried it in a pot. The second one, I killed by giving it fertilizer. The third one, I strangled. I killed the fourth one by giving it salt. Then I threw them into the river.
They would give us a spoon and some salt. We would put 3 spoons of salt in the baby's mouth, push it inside with our fingers and cover it. Then the baby would die.
One of the midwives, Hakia, claimed that they had no choice. If they did not follow orders, they risked being killed themselves.
If we spoke up, people would threaten us. The midwife gets into trouble from all sides. How can she tell anyone about this?
All the midwives I spoke to were from poor families, members of the so-called lower castes.
Brahmin, Rajput, Bhumihar and Vaishya Banya. These people would say they needed to give a lot of dowry.
In rural Bihar in the mid-90s, it was almost impossible for a midwife to refuse an order from someone from a so-called higher caste. They wanted me to know. They felt they had no choice. But there was one midwife who would not openly confess. She is the only one who is still alive. Her name is Siro.
My father died and my maternal grandparents got me married. When I went to school, they said that a girl should not be taught. They used to say, what will you get by teaching girls? Boys should be taught. Boys will earn and feed us. The girls will go away. A girl will not get a job.
Siro is from Katihar, close to the neighboring district of Purnia where I come from. When Siro was about 12, her grandparents arranged for her to marry a man in his 30s. The man she married had health problems and struggled to make a living. So the pressure to provide for her family was placed solely on her.
My household runs because of me. I do not live on anyone else's earnings. I earn by myself and run the family.
Siro received almost no formal education. Instead, she began working as a midwife from a very young age.
I didn't even know how to wear a sari. I was 10 to 12 years old. My mother and grandmother sent me to someone's house to work. At first, I was afraid. When I remembered what my grandmother had taught me.
In time, Siro gave birth to 2 sons and 3 daughters. Each daughter would need a dowry in order to be married. This could be anything, cash, jewelry, utensils. For many families in India, a girl has to bring something as a condition of marriage. It is the dowry system that makes sons into assets and daughters into liabilities.
I feel worried in my heart. I have a feeling of regret about all my daughters. How will I give money? You see how my sons have become very thin because they work and work. Where will I give dowry from?
With 2 sons, 3 daughters, and a husband who barely earned any money, Siro was crushed by responsibilities.
I cannot depend on anyone. The idea that I will eat without doing any work, that is not there.
Year after year, I returned to see Siro and witnessed how hard it was for her to make ends meet.
I would cook rice at night. I'd have the starch water and feed the rice to my children. Every day I had to take care of medicines, clothes for family and children. I had to do it myself.
But because Siro was good at her job, she was in demand. People paid her whatever they could, sometimes money, at other times saris. Being a midwife was not just a livelihood. It soon became her identity.
I do good for everyone. I perform delivery, I do all the work. That's why they want me. I accept whatever they give me.
When I first met Siro, she was working as a midwife and still does today. There was something remarkable about her, a skilled woman in a village who had the power to give life or take it away.
It's done. It's done. Stay calm. Yes, it's done.
As Siro worked, helping pregnant women deliver babies, I found it hard to understand what I suspected she had done.
When we see a small child, we feel so much compassion and love. God sent the child. God gave life. It feels so good to hold a child. A newborn makes me very happy. It is so tiny, just this big. I feel very good.
I was a young reporter at that time, persistent, eager to know more. Had Siro too killed babies at birth? To try and discover the truth, I sought out a woman who had changed the course of history for the midwives of Katihar. Her name is Anila Kumari.
Where I come from, we were equal. Since my childhood, I didn't see any discrimination. I got a lot of respect from my parents. My in-laws were educated people. My mother-in-law was a school teacher. She was a social worker. She used to go for meetings at the Women Development Association. That's how I got interested in this work.
Anila moved to Katihar after she was married. Inspired by her mother-in-law's work, she began working with midwives in the poor neighborhoods.
I wanted to see how I could help the midwives financially. When I met them, they opened up about their problems, their source of income. How did they earn?
The midwives were playing an important role, but receiving little compensation for it. Anila had an idea.
I helped them get loans from the National Credit Fund for Women. I formed a group of 5 to 10. Gradually, they started returning the money they had been given. We also became close. When trust grows, a person talks more openly. So during this period, the midwives started opening up to us. They felt I was trustworthy and they could talk to me. The midwives told me, when we go to someone's house, if a boy is born, we get more money. If it's a girl, we get less. In some cases, the midwives would get nothing. Suppose somebody had 2 daughters already. They'd say, we don't want to keep this child, since 3 daughters will become a burden on us.
The midwives felt unable to refuse, but there was also money involved.
They used to say if a boy is born, then they would get 40 to 50 rupees. But in case of the birth of a girl, they would get less. So they started adopting this method of killing, of strangulation, or whatever else. So they used to get a little more, not for the birth, but for killing a baby. Their grandmothers, everyone was a midwife. They all used to do this work. There was no other work, so they couldn't leave the place.
There can be no justification for murder, but the caste system, dowry, and the preference for sons had created this world. A system that allowed baby girls to be murdered and forced midwives to kill.
The midwives told me, sister, we are forced to do this kind of work.
Anila started documenting this hidden world and the scale of the killing.
They used to do it for the money. They were poor and they thought, what could happen if we do it? At least we'll earn some money.
The midwives told me a similar story.
He would come back and say, sir, give me the money. We will go home. They would refuse, saying, why will we give you money? Go home. Go quietly. If you say anything about this to anybody, we will kill you and set your house on fire. The baby's family would warn us not to make a scene. Who could we complain to? We were scared. If we went to the police, we'd get into trouble. If we spoke up, people would threaten us. The midwife gets trouble from all sides. How can she tell anyone about this?
Brahmins, Rajputs, Kayasth. These were influential people. They used to close all the windows and doors and say, if you do not kill, you will be killed.
Anila noted down everything the midwives told her. That each midwife said she was killing between 2 and 3 baby girls every month. In the 90s, Anila was part of a team that documented the scale of the killings. Their report estimated
that more than 1,000 baby girls were being murdered every year in one district by 35 midwives. One of these was Siro. The report said she had killed at least 16 baby girls. In almost all cases, the baby's mother did not want her newborn daughter killed, but it was out of their control.
Sometimes I heard it from the midwives themselves. They used to tell me that the mother would cry for 2-3 days. She used to be mentally disturbed. On top of that, if she cried, the family members used to scold her, saying, "Why are you behaving like this?" The midwives told us the mother used to be very sad. It was impossible for her to resist. She was a woman living in a patriarchal society, so the men used to decide. The women were not able to gather the courage to say, "No, I won't let you do this. This cannot happen."
One of the midwives, Dharmi, told me the same thing.
The mother never ordered for the child to be murdered. How could her mother say that? She has just given birth. How would a mother say this? They never asked me to kill. The father was the one. The baby's paternal grandmother used to order it. The mother used to just sit, cry.
Anila realized that since the mothers were not able to stop their daughters from being killed, she would have to find another way of saving them. She turned to the midwives.
How can we change the thinking of the midwives? That's what we began to focus on. Our hope was that at least one thing would change, that they would refuse to do this with their own hands. Reporting this to the police might not have solved the problem. I don't think the police would have been able to change it. Only social workers like us understand the complexity of the issue, and only we can motivate the midwives and change things. If the midwives are being forced to carry out these killings, then the next step is to make them more aware so they stop doing it themselves. We worked with them for a very long time and trained them, saying, "Would you do this to your daughter?" Then they realized they shouldn't do this. Siro was once holding her baby girl. We asked her, "If you strangle her and she dies, how would you feel?" She said, "No, sister, how can I kill?" By giving her this example, I told her that when you kill any baby girl, you should feel the same pain because you're also a mother.
Slowly, Anila's work began to pay off. The first midwife to save a baby was Bhago Devi.
Bhago Devi was more experienced than the doctors. If they struggled with a delivery case, they would call her. She would bring very complicated cases back on track. She had learned from her grandmothers. She was uneducated but very intelligent.
Bhago was a skilled midwife, but according to Anila, she had also killed the most number of baby girls. Anila worked hard to convince Bhago to save them instead.
Anila Didi had said that any child who's abandoned or thrown away or unwanted should be brought to the office. I kept this in mind. I decided I wouldn't let the child die. Whatever happens, I won't allow them to kill, nor will I kill myself. I'll raise the child, get her adopted, or bring her to the office.
With Anila's support, Bhago began saving baby girls. Other midwives, like Siro, started to do the same.
Now whoever asks me to kill, I tell them, "Look, give me the child, and I'll take her to Anila Madam."
Some had ants on them. Some were barely breathing. Their condition was really bad. They hadn't even been breastfed and had been abandoned.
The midwives began to bring the babies to Anila's office, but they could not remain there. Anila needed help. Luckily, she had a plan.
Namaste Amitabh ji, aaiye. Namaste, ma'am.
Namaste.
Less than 200 miles away from where Anila and the midwives were helping baby girls to safety, a woman called Medha Shekhar was in Patna, on the other side of Bihar, documenting cases of female infanticide at the NGO she worked for. Anila worked closely with Medha and her team to find a solution. They would welcome the newborn babies and take care of them before arranging for them to be adopted into new families. Medha remembers all the baby girls were originally given the same first name to identify them.
I remember all the babies were named Kosi something. We all remember Kosi Lata prominently because she was the first baby girl to be brought to the NGO and later adopted by a family in Patna. The other baby girls who were brought here were also named Kosi something. So there was a baby named Kosi Nidhi, Kosi Kumari, Kosi something.
The midwives rescued 5 babies. One tragically died. The other 4 were successfully adopted. Now, nearly 30 years later, I was keen to know what happened to these girls, the ones who survived against all odds. Medha thinks she may know where one girl is.
There is one girl who was sent to Pune and she is in touch with me. Now, I could try and see if she would be willing to talk to anyone. She is called Monica now and she lives in Pune. She has been adopted. Her family is there only. She is now all mature and grown up.
Definitely, ma'am, ye kamal ki baat ho jayegi agar.
Let me talk to her. I will try. She should agree. Actually, it can be difficult for adopted children once they are grown up, whether she would want to tell people about her origins or even meet someone in this regard.
The most famous wrestler in Iranian history.
When Ghulam Reza Takhti entered, there was chaos.
Whose legend is surrounded by mystery.
Really? Takhti died? How come?
Immediately the rumors started.
Legend of Takhti.
Was Takhti actually trying to provoke the regime?
Part of amazing sports stories from the BBC World Service.
There's this massive landslide of myth, and somewhere in there is the truth.
Search for amazing sports stories wherever you get your BBC podcasts.
You're listening to the documentary from the BBC World Service. Over the next few days, everything moves at speed. Medha calls Monica, who agrees to meet me in Pune, in the western state of Maharashtra. The adoption agency would not let us look at the records, so we can never know for sure. But Monica's origins in Patna, her approximate date of birth, and the initial name she was given, Kosi, all point to the same conclusion, that Monica may be one of the girls rescued by Anila and the midwives. After waiting for so long to find out what happened to the girls who were saved, I am outside Monica's house, possibly one of the 4 girls who lived.
Monica?
Yeah, right.
Namaste, namaste, namaste. So what do you remember of the time when you first heard that you were adopted?
I was adopted at the age of 3, so it wasn't some fine day that they told me I'm adopted. The day they brought me, when we were going home, right from there, I mean, they were so happy to tell people that we have adopted a baby girl. As a 3-year-old, you understand certain things.
Yeah.
You were able to comprehend that. Yeah. And so from that point of time, I was like listening to that fact about me. And that is how I came to know.
Monica's family knew little about her early life, other than that she was from Bihar. It was only when she got older that Monica began to ask questions.
So roughly maybe in the teenagers, and I think that happens with any adopted child that they're just curious to know everything about why, what's in the house, about their past.
How did you search for roots then at that time? Did you try or just questions? Or
no, I just had the questions limited to myself. I did ask my parents. Anything that they knew, they had always shared with me. So none of the facts were hidden from me. They did tell me I am from Bihar, but then more than that, even they didn't know like what's exactly the thing. So
That must have been a tough
definitely
time for a teenager. Like,
the most toughest times in my life was that period. I had so many questions and no answers for them.
I wanted to know how much Monica knew about her past and the role of the midwives.
Monica, 90s, mein, early 90s, mein. तुमको पता है ना मैं बिहार से हूँ.
हाँ.
They started actually saving baby girls. They said that no, we don't kill actually now.
And but, then I tell Monica that I think she is one of those girls that was saved.
Solid evidence है. You may be one of them. Actually, I'm feeling so, you know, not good about it, but to tell you, but the fact remains that I personally feel that you're very lucky, I guess, to be saved.
Monica takes a minute to absorb all this, and I wonder how she has processed the extraordinary facts of her life, that she survived when so many other baby girls were killed at birth.
I was so confused with my thoughts. I didn't know if I was feeling emotional or sad or happy that, you know, I'm one of the childs who was saved. So I really had mixed feelings. I was happy to know about it because it felt somewhere like now my life is complete. Now I know about, you know, what happened in my past. I had that thought in my mind, yeah, I was saved and that's a really good thing. But before that, there were too many who were killed. It's so disheartening to even hear that, yeah, right, I am saved and I'm very happy for it, but still there are many who had to, you know, give their lives.
I was amazed that in this moment, Monica had the compassion to think of other girls. She may not have known that she was almost a victim of infanticide, but she had heard about its harsh reality.
It's a really big thing. You're killing a life and you randomly just call it infanticide. It's a murder. How does the heart even, you know, feel to be ready to do that to a very small kid about whom you don't know anything, you know, other than the fact that she's a girl? That's the only fact you know about that person. And you want to murder them.
I had one more question to ask Monica.
So, just curious to know, do you want to see your roots where you were from? Someday. Or
someday.
Or meet these
midwives
Anila. And Anila.
Yeah, and if Anila, though, of course, because she is doing such a... And as you said, you've interviewed her like 3 decades before is when maybe I was not even born. So she has been doing this great work since then, which was an absolute big deal back then. A woman doing that, so much of courageous work.
Everyone wants to see you. Anila is so curious to meet at least one of those 5 girls.
I feel like that they did a hard work and now they are so curious to meet the result. Like, we have saved a life and where it has landed to. I just got that scenario in my mind.
For 30 years, this story has been playing inside my head. Ever since the midwives confessed to what they had done, my own life had moved on. I had a child of my own. But I never forgot what they had told me about the baby girls they had killed. It felt unreal. I wondered what the midwives, almost all, long dead, would make of it, and what Ciro would feel about meeting Monica.
Yes, since 20 years we have been working to save babies. We are not doing the work of killing them. To kill or to save, if it is in our hands, then we do the work of saving.
Despite our countless conversations over almost 3 decades, Ciro would still not openly confess to me about what she had done. She danced around it. I wanted her to speak freely about what had happened, but she refused to address it, talking instead about her role in the community now.
I have helped so many people. Now they have gone far away to Delhi, Punjab, Gujarat to earn. In this community, has anyone spoken ill of me?
Only once in the years I have known Ciro did she talk about what she had done, as if it was a dream that had haunted her ever since.
I couldn't eat for at least 15 days. At night, it seemed as if the baby was screaming and crying in the same way. Wouldn't I be scared at night? I think about my own children, other children, no matter whose child it is. See, every mother is the same. A woman can do whatever she wants. It's in a woman's hands to take or give life. Please understand this. I haven't killed many. Around 4 or 5.
I didn't know it then, but this was the one time Ciro would admit to what she had done and the shadow it had cast on her life. It seemed impossible to quantify the effect it had on her. At other times, Ciro suggested that there were others who were guilty too.
The woman who gave birth, the woman who did not pick up the child and feed it her milk, that baby will die. The baby will die. Like it has been an hour or 1.5 hours, the woman is back to her senses, she picks the baby up, washes her breasts, and breastfeeds the baby. That baby will be saved, will not die. If the baby is left on the bed or the floor and not picked up to be fed because she is a girl, they think, why give her milk? A son was not born. So the baby will become thinner, and in 4 or 5 days, will eventually die if it doesn't get milk or water. We were 3-4 trained midwives. Our thought was how to save a child, save a life. Saving one life saves many.
I will never know at what exact point Ciro became focused on saving the babies. The girls who lived became something to focus on. Hope amongst the darkness of everything that had happened.
I used to think about them, the girls, even in my sleep at night. No one said, come, the girls are here, or they have gone elsewhere. I could not find anyone with whom I could go and visit them. The work of midwives is to save babies in what ways we can, how to save the babies. We will not try to kill them. What happened in the past is now in the past.
As I left Ciro, I wondered what meeting Monica, after all this time, would mean to her. I can't believe, just weeks after we first made contact with Monica, she is here in Bihar, which she left as a baby almost 30 years ago. Our first stop is Anila's house, where Anila wants to know all about Monica and her life, and where Monica wants to thank Anila for the work she has done.
I think the moment she saw me and she had tears in her eyes, so obviously that was a happy moment for her, and so she cried. I could feel the pride that she was overwhelmed with to see me, because When we are just working on consistently on a particular aim or particular goal, and you see the result of that, so that overwhelmingness what comes is what I have seen and heard that day.
Anila is so excited that she gets on a video call with her daughter to introduce her to Monica.
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 Ever in my life I'll get this chance to meet someone, maybe who has saved my life, and so I am here. I think I should be grateful to Anila ji.
I feel so inspired by you. You know, you should be an inspiration for all India and I would say all world.
Then not only Anila ji, her entire family was so happy to see
right.
her daughter.
I spoke to her daughter and I felt so emotionally connected. Like maybe I've been speaking since years and years to them. I never felt like this is just the first time that I'm talking to them or I'm seeing them. So that was overall really wonderful experience to meet Anila ji and her family. That was really great. She was so happy and so emotional at the same time. I could just connect with what she's going through. And she was so happy to see me in front of her. Also, me myself is just one of them. I think she has saved, I don't know, maybe more than 100, 200, thousands of lives of girls. Just by seeing one of them, she was so overwhelmed. And she thinks about the overall result of what she has been doing. Incredible work. I don't think there's any word to describe that.
Finally, Monica is now going to meet Ciro.
This is Ciro's community. Okay. Starting from there. And we are going to Ciro's house. And as you know that she is one of the surviving midwives of 1990s. And as you know, she has a history, but obviously she has changed a lot. And she is very eager to meet you also. Come. This is her house.
Okay.
So come.
We are outside Ciro's door. I have no idea how both women will react. But as Ciro meets Monica, she embraces her. She is overcome with emotion. I had told Ciro that we could not be certain Monica was one of the babies rescued by the midwives. But for Ciro, this was a life she had saved.
The moment I met her, she just hugged me tightly and she cried inconsolably. So I could feel emotions coming out from her, you know, or regrets in the form of crying out. She was trying to just accept that, I did some wrong. And me in front of her was the example of some trophy or something to her that this is the girl you saved, you know, one of the girls that you saved and this is it today. I could feel she could really, you know, realize that, I did something really good in my life. I had conflicting emotions within me when I saw her. I think initially I was in a dilemma if maybe I should believe she has changed from the core or not. But the moment she started explaining everything that she does, she made me believe that, yes, there is a transformation of mind for sure. And she's working towards a good cause. Of course, the things she has done is not something that is forgettable or forgivable. But on the other hand, as we say, every coin has two sides.
Very interesting thing about Ciro, I'm going to tell you, that during my interaction with her over almost 3 decades, she never cried. Never ever cried. And I was even shocked to see her crying, and uncontrollably. So I could sense, without using the words,
she was confessing. It was not just normal emotional moment. The rest of it was her guilt coming out of it.
That's true. And I could sense that. I could sense the guilt, that is for sure.
I felt very good that Monica came to meet me. Monica came back after 25 to 26 years. When I saw her, I felt content that the child we saved, the one we gave the gift of life to, the three of us midwives fed her milk and looked after her for 3 days. Back then, I had my daughter Kanchan. I had breast milk. Both Kanchan and she had it. So when I saw the child, Monica, I felt content. My milk didn't go in vain.
But I wanted to know, had it brought back memories of the baby girls the midwives had been forced to kill?
No, I didn't think of them. I didn't remember all that. I think about what's in front of me, right? The things that have happened, sir. Whatever has happened, has happened. This is in the past, all in the past.
I have followed Siro's story half my life. As a young journalist, I had wanted to understand, but it was time to stop asking questions and to leave Siro alone.
This is a story of old times, not of 20 years back. It is a story of old times. What pain. I used to come back after seeing someone's dead baby or a newborn who had died after 2 days. I had seen the baby, cut its umbilical cord. I felt the pain later as to how the child died at night. What else could be painful? How did it die? Some said the bird crushed the baby. Some in the community said that the baby was not fed milk, so it died. Its mouth dried up. The mother-in-law said, a daughter has been born. Why would you feed her milk? Leave her sleep on the floor. Why would you feed milk to a girl? How will we marry your 4 daughters? Even now, because of dowry, the girls are killed.
While I was working on the story, the unthinkable happened. A baby girl was found abandoned in a bush, just hours old. A group of runners heard her cry and rescued her. I show Monica a video of the moment she was found.
Hey, look. Not really a book in it. Hey, yeah. अरे लड़की छुला है कत्ता सुंदर लड़की 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 लड़की
लड़की लड़की लड़की लड़की लड़की लड़की लड़की लड़की लड़की लड़की लड़की लड़की लड़की लड़की लड़की लड़की लड़की लड़की लड़की
लड़की लड़की लड़की लड़की लड़की लड़की लड़की लड़की लड़की लड़की लड़की
लड़की लड़की लड़की लड़की
लड़की लड़की लड़की लड़की लड़की लड़की लड़की लड़की लड़की लड़की लड़की लड़की लड़की लड़की लड़की लड़की लड़की लड़की लड़की लड़की लड़की लड़की लड़की लड़की लड़की लड़की लड़की लड़की लड़की लड़की लड़की लड़की लड़की लड़की लड़की लड़की लड़की लड़की She was in a bad condition. Yeah.
Yeah, of course, a newborn baby abandoned like this. How do you expect to survive?
Does it make you angry?
Of course it does. It's so disheartening and I'm just not able to even digest the fact that a baby can be found in such a place, in that condition. It really makes... I think more than angry, it is so... I don't know what to say, but not something that is acceptable or easy to even hear.
Monica went to see the baby at the adoption agency where she was waiting for her new parents to pick her up.
When I met the baby girl, so she was so sweet and so beautiful, a little baby girl. And I also got to know that she'll be going to her home. Yeah, she've got parents and she'll be adopted. But one thought that came to my mind is we always say maybe the things have reduced. Things meaning infanticides and feticides. But this is a cycle again. Like I can see myself there a few years ago. And now again there's some girl similar to me. But yeah, she'll definitely be having a bright future. If there's a bad side, there's a good side. There are parents like mine and her. who are there out to give good futures to such baby girls or boys.
Monica even wrote a short letter to the babies she met at the adoption agency.
So I met you today and I was so overwhelmed to see all of you. This is some special message for you guys. You are so special and so capable of bringing in the best to this world. Believe in your power, believe in your capacities and bring the best future out of you. My best wishes and blessings with all of you.
It is time for Monica to go home.
Thank you very much, Monica, for giving us me time. It has been very emotional few days.
Yeah.
I'm sure. Are you feeling all right?
Yeah, I'm feeling all right now. I feel from somewhere we have started the story. So it should end somewhere. This is the ending point.
Yeah,
like we finally meet. It's very rare that in such kind of stories you get to track everything, everyone down. That's really difficult, but
yeah.
It is real, and I have never thought in my life that this would ever happen. I'll be coming to Bihar. Never.
Ten months after that abandoned baby was found in the bush, I'm here to meet the parents who adopted her.
My elder daughter is Gillu.
Acha, okay. अच्छा इसका घर का क्या है कुछ नाम रखा
घर में इधर का
अच्छा
इदू रिकॉल है इदू एंड शी रिस्पोंड आल्सो इदू देन माय डॉटर हैज गिवन अ इदी शी ऑलवेज सिंग द सॉन्ग इदी की दीदी सो शी इज हैप्पी विद दैट सो या शी रिस्पोंड टू
दैट एमा एंड गौरव लिव इन जोरहाट इन द नॉर्थ ईस्टर्न स्टेट ऑफ असम गौरव इज एन इंडियन एयरफोर्स ऑफिसर. They met via a newspaper ad for arranged marriage.
Initial 2-3 years, we were very normal. It was a lovely couple. I mean, we both were moving around, having a good time. And then when we thought of expanding our family, we had some issues. For that, we underwent treatment at Army Hospital, R&R. And the treatment process was very long. And it was definitely very painful physically as well as mentally, very challenging for Emma.
Emma and Gaurav struggled to get pregnant for years. But finally, after 2 rounds of IVF, Emma became pregnant with their daughter Rihanna.
That is when we realized how difficult it is to give birth to a child. And the value of human life is something what we got to know.
While they waited for news for their pregnancy, the couple made a vow. No matter what happened, even if they were fortunate enough to have a child of their own, they would still adopt a baby girl.
Like Gaurav said, we realized the value of human life at that point of time, how difficult it is. And that very moment of time, we thought that we will adopt a child. And yes, we were having that we will adopt a girl child. That was pre-decided, I would say, that we will be having adoption, and adoption will be of a girl child.
A few years after Emma gave birth to Rihanna, they began to search for their second daughter, registering for adoption. After 3 years, they got a call. There was a baby girl waiting for them in Bihar.
First day, she did not accept us. First day, she was like, she was coming
in my lab, but then within a minute, she was crying.
Yeah.
And seeing her cry, I was not happy. I was also very, and I was like, main isko kaise leke jaun? Matlab, she's crying.
Then she smiled for the first time.
Yeah.
After 36 hours, after seeing her, then we went for a walk, and then she was okay. But suddenly, she would get anxiety issues, so she would suddenly start crying. But I think it was 3-4 days, she was absolutely okay.
But those were beautiful days. As a family of 4, we connected.
Yeah.
Those 3-4 days were magical. We connected as a wholesome family with it. Maybe that just created a little kind of bond, or maybe a trust kind of thing within her, that these people are people whom I can trust and connect with them. So, yeah, I think so. That is how it went that way.
Are you aware of your child's history, circumstances under which your child was found?
I mean, these agency people, the basic bottom line, they told us.
Yeah, they told us that she was found in a field.
Yeah.
And there were some kids, a group of kids or young guys who were going to a school or maybe they were doing some jogging or something. They found a kid, they reported to the police. And after the medical checkup, they told probably she was a few hours old. So somebody had left her around midnight. So this is what we were aware. We were prepared, something
mentally,
like this.
Yeah.
Mentally, we were prepared that a case could be of this type of case, and especially with a girl child. More or less, it would have been some similar
this
story.
Only, yeah.
We were mentally very ready, and I don't know how we are going to tell her in future. We have not thought about it, but we'll see.
Before I left Emma and Gaurav, I asked about their hopes for Eda's future.
One thing is for sure, we'll give her the best, whatever we can, in terms of education, whatever she wants to do, she will do. She will have all the avenues open, that is her life, and we'll completely support her. She's a fighter, so she will do very well in life. I hope we, all of us, are there by that time. And to see that.
We have learned in last 8-9 months.
They
have a sharp memory.
A few months earlier, I had stood at the place where this baby had been thrown away. Another girl, unnamed and unwanted. But seeing Edha here, loved and cared for by this family, gave me hope that one day we will come to cherish all our children. It is unknown exactly how many girls were being killed at the time Monica was born, but 4 precious, beautiful lives were saved.
After knowing all the facts of my life and going to Bihar, meeting people involved in my life, Anilaji and Zero, now I feel like complete. The past chapter is closed now. And you know, you finally know the story.
Thanks for listening to the documentary from the BBC World Service. I'm Amitabh Parashar. The Midwife's Confession was produced by Anubha Bhonsle, Purnima Mehta, Devangshu Roy, Neha Tara Mehta, Annabelle Dees, Rob Wilson, and Amon Kwaza. The editors were Daniel Adamson and Rebecca Henschke. It was mixed by Neva Misarian.
The most famous wrestler in Iranian history.
When Ghulam Reza Takhti entered, there was chaos.
Whose legend is surrounded by mystery.
Really? Takhti died? How come?
Immediately the rumors started.
Legend of Takhti.
Was Takhti actually trying to provoke the regime?
Part of Amazing Sports Stories from the BBC World Service.
There's this massive landslide of myth, and somewhere in there is the truth.
Search for Amazing Sports Stories wherever you get your BBC podcasts.